What is happening there? What did your research find?
So, I mean, I'm a permafrost scientist. We study permafrost, which underlays half of the Canadian landmass. So it's a permafrost country. Permafrost it's a geological manifestation of climate. It's frozen ground. And in the north, much of the ground is frozen. The permafrost can be hundreds of meters thickness. The permafrost temperature varies, so you can have very cold permafrost in the Arctic and very warm permafrost as you go further south. What we're particularly interested in as scientists is understanding which permafrost contains ice, because if there's lots of ice in the ground and that permafrost thaws, then the terrain will subside and the landscape will change as a function of how much ice there is in the ground. So you can have permafrost in bedrock, right? And if it thaws, it doesn't really make a difference, right? So what we started to do is we started to map these what we call FOSS lumps, and it's these features there in the article that you would have seen. It's where the icy permafrost or the ice-rich permafrost starts to thaw, and these disturbances kind of chew their way up across the landscape as the ice melts. And so two things we've noticed. One is that these features are becoming very, very large. They've grown particularly rapidly over the last 20 years. We have features that in the Inuvik area that occupy 20, 30 hectares of area, and they've displaced millions of cubic meters of materials. And we have this good evidence that this is not something that has been common in the last, 100 or 1,000 years. One of the things we decided to do then is we said, okay, well, where these features occur, they're indicators that there's lots of ice in the ground. You can't have these types of things happen if there's not a lot of ice in the ground. And we mapped where those features occur across the Western Canadian landmass. And what the pattern was that emerged was this heat map. And it showed very clearly that the distribution of these disturbances was bounded by the limits of the glaciation, so the continental glaciation, which covered almost all of Canada, as early as 13,000 years ago. The limits of where we find these FOSS lumps is very, very well constrained by the limits of the ice sheet. And what it allowed us to do was it allowed us to put the story together that in the north, or sorry, when the ice sheet retreated, there was lots of landscape change. Of course, that's such a huge disturbance to the landmass. And the southern Canada, big transition occurred 13,000 years ago. In the north, as the ice sheet retreated, permafrost essentially preserved a lot of this ice that was either buried or formed in that very dynamic environment at the front of the ice sheet. And this ancient ice has been preserved for over 10,000 years. And the changes that transformed the southern landscapes, which occurred 10,000 years ago, some of those changes haven't occurred yet in the north. And so the climate-driven thaw that's occurring now is manifested by very significant changes in these particular landscapes. So what it tells us is that some landscapes have this inherent potential for change in the future, and it's related to the inheritance from the last glaciation.
Can you explain to me, like, do you understand how this permafrost was formed? What was the how did this ice get trapped in the ground?
So if you can imagine, have you ever seen a glacier in the Canadian Rockies or elsewhere? The snout of the glacier, the end of the glacier, is called the moraine, and it's glacier ice, but it's not nice white ice. It's full of dirt and sediment, and there's lots of water that's coming out of the end of the glacier, and there's like ponds and all of this. Now, as that ice sheet starts to thaw, those materials accumulate at the top of the ice sheet, similar to like snowbanks in the wintertime in the parking lot. When they start to melt, there's dirt that covers the snowbanks and they stick around for a long time. a very, very similar thing happens. So you have these deposits, which geologists call moraines, and they're covered by a veneer of sediment, and that ice continues to melt out. But in the north, when permafrost aggrades or formed, because the climate stayed cold in the north, then that layer of materials over top of the ice was thick enough to prevent thaw, and it preserved a lot of that ice for thousands of years.
Okay, and now because the climate is changing, that basically the foundation on is melting out.
That's right. Yeah, and so the pattern that we're seeing—it's not—it's not this random pattern. It's not that these disturbances are occurring everywhere. They're occurring now. We find very predictably in association with these deposits that would have occurred right at the snout of the ice sheet.
Mm-hmm. And this is what the Laurentide ice sheet is, or was. That's where it occurs.
That's right. Yeah. So it occurs at the maximum limits of the Laurentide ice sheet, and then in places where the ice sheet retreated and readvanced, geologists have identified those locations, and we find that those locations are changing most rapidly by these fossil slumps. And some of the environments that are changing the most rapidly, in fact, are the most northern landscapes. And that seems counterintuitive because the permafrost should be very cold in the most northern settings.
Yeah.
But what in fact has happened is that ice has been best preserved in those coldest environments. So the potential for change is actually the greatest. See, so if you think the other end member of that is southern Canada, where all of the change has already occurred, right? Mm-hmm. So that was actually also quite interesting for us to see. Yeah.
So I'm kind of looking at this map where you have this red, yellow dots.
Oh, yeah,
okay. And it looks like this tongues or something. It's almost like an inverted fire. And
yeah.
Is this where you would see the tongues of the ice sheet retreating?
That, exactly. So the blue lines on that map, that represents the margins of the ice sheet. So the ice sheet expanded from central Canada, and the dark blue lines were the maximum limits of the ice sheet. And then that represents most of those deposits represent those moraines. So we see them in mountain glaciers, but they're very small, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this would have been a moraine that is absolutely huge. It's at a continental scale, and so a lot of that ice, and some of it is meltwater that refroze from the glacier. Some of it is buried ice. It's a combination. But these are the landscapes that geomorphologists know change very rapidly in ice sheets in temperate areas, and these transformative processes that occurred in the south, thousands of years ago, that process was delayed in the north because the climate stayed relatively cold, and permafrost has clearly preserved a lot of this ice. So so these landscapes are sort of poised to change.
So what does this mean in practical terms?
Well, it means that I guess a couple things. Understanding the landscape's past is actually very, very important in to predict future change. I think as Canadians who have a large part of our country in the north, understanding which landscapes are most sensitive to change is, it's actually, that's critical information for societies, so we can understand how to best adapt in a future changing climate. I think the other thing is we also are interested in understanding which ecosystems are likely to change the most. And in order to be able to predict that, we have to understand which landscapes are going to be most sensitive to change and what those landscape and downstream effects are going to look like. So, often a message is that, well, the Arctic is warming and the permafrost is thawing, but that means very different things in different places. And I think this map is an example of us moving forward to understanding how those changes will vary across different landscapes. And
what does this mean in terms of the landscape? For example, all these red dots, does it mean that, parts of it will just melt away and flow away? Like, so you would have literally rivers of permafrost moving?
In many cases, we have rivers that are full of sediment because these materials that were frozen in the hills are now flowing downslope into streams, and those sediments are being carried by the streams. It's affecting the amount of sediment in the streams in a profound way. It's also affecting the dissolved materials in some of these streams. And so I think it's important to know where these areas are, because that helps us predict how those cascade downstream and accumulate in larger systems and then into the ocean.
Because this has the potential also of changing ocean chemistry with all the materials that it carries.
Indeed, it would have potential to change the chemistry of the areas downstream, and in some cases that's the oceans, right? So figuring out where these impacts are likely to be most pronounced is really important from a scientific perspective.
How you talked about the Inuvik Taktayaktuk Highway. How is it going to affect infrastructure?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're already seeing some of these types of processes affecting infrastructure. I think a key thing is to understand which landscapes are the most prone to change so that we can develop mitigation techniques and be prepared to mitigate or alter our planning for infrastructure projects.